Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, my friends, out there in Radio Land. How is everyone? This is Alejandro Rojas with Open Minds Radio. And I've got to mute because this is cool. I'm watching myself too, and there's a little delay. I heard an echo, but it is corrected now. And I can see what I did just half a second ago here on Ustream Live. So you can go watch me live on video at Ustream, and we tested this last week. We've got it rolling this week, and it's kind of strange because now I got it up where I can see, because people like the chat on the Ustream, and they wanted me to pop in there to chat, and, you know, it was new. I had enough to do with handling all of this stuff, but I'm extremely talented, luckily. That's, you know, something I can be proud of. And so I can multitask. So I'm able to now get the chat up and be in the Ustream chat, be in the Blog Talk chat, and chatting away live. And look, everybody's getting into the Blog Talk chat. So, yeah, come into Ustream if you want, people, and watch the video. And I should quit doing that because I can see myself what I did a few seconds ago. That's why I'm doing this stuff. And so I can see myself moving around. And we got our little buddy in IARC in here. He's a small little creature that we enjoy, that Wendell Stevens has brought us, part of Wendell Stevens' collection. So we have a great show today. We've got Ron Regeer. And Ron has done a lot of really cool stuff. He is the Associate Director of Research for MUFON, and his task is to create an abduction research team. So a lot of people, you know, say MUFON isn't into abductions, but they are. And so we're going to have Ron on today, and he's going to tell us about that. Another cool thing that he does is the some research on Hopi and Anasazi relations with extraterrestrials, their legends and stuff like that. In fact, he just spoke at a conference in Denver a few weeks ago. And so we're going to talk about that. Yo, yo, yo. I'm telling yo to all my buddies in the chat. My good buddy from Denver, Sancho Sanchez, looks like he's in the chat. Jackal, some of the regulars, which is really cool. So cool stuff going on today, people. I'll give you some news going on. And, you know, I want to talk about one piece of news in particular. Jeff Peckman at the Extra Campaign. And let me bring that up. The Extra Campaign is his campaign back in Denver to get Denver voters to be able to vote on creating an extraterrestrial affairs committee. Here's what's kind of crazy. He got 7,000 signatures. He only needed 4,000. The company that helped him get the signatures, they said, you know, it's always best to get 20% or more, because on average, it's usually 20% are rejected because the people don't really live in the county they say they live in. They just wrote too poorly or something like that. And they have an error margin of 3 to 5%. Well, funny enough, this has never happened to these people before, and they do tons of petitions. And in fact, they did others for this ballot initiative in Denver, and it didn't happen to these ones, but they rejected like 40% of the signatures. I think that sounds a little bit fishy and unfair, not very cool. So Jeff is having to go out and get some more signatures by the end of November so that he can get this thing on the ballot. He's so close. And donations actually help a lot. This is America. You buy your way onto ballots, essentially. You know, you pay a company to go get the signatures for you, and they get the signatures. I know, it seems silly. You should be able to go out there and get your signatures, but this is America. Dollars and cents is what it's all about. So money is a big help. Or if you're in the Denver area and you do have time to go out and get signatures, that's also a big help. You can go to extracampaign.org to help him out. Extracampaign.org, because that's really frustrating that they rejected so many of his signatures. Not cool, dude. So, another couple things I wanted to mention. UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Happy to say, of course, that we are syndicated on that show, which goes all around the world, and that's why we have some cool buddies from, I think, Denmark even, and the UK, and from all over the world in our chat usually, and, you know, we welcome those people, and I'm really also happy to talk about Glastonbury Radio, out there where all the crop circles and coolness happens, out in Glastonbury. I can't wait. I am going to visit that area one day, and I can't wait to do that, but we're being syndicated on Glastonbury Internet Radio as well. So lots of cool stuff going on. We're making friends all over the place because we're friendly people, you know? That's why I've got my Argon buddy, international and intergalactic buddies. So really cool. Mr. Coors Beer Man is in the chat on Ustream, and he says, I got to bring up the moon bombing tonight. And it is unfortunate. It's not like we're sending a bomb to the moon. Lots of people are saying, oh, we're sending a bomb to the moon. But we are, you know, it's still not cool. What they're doing is they've sent a satellite up there. It's circling the moon, doing lots of stuff. Well, one of its rockets that is spent, they are dropping it onto the moon, 2-ton rocket, and it's going to, you know, impact, and they hope make this 6-mile tall cloud as it impacts. They're trying to get it right into this crater, and that way they're going to be able to tell if there's water on the moon. Of course, we already know there is. The European Space Agency told us this 3 years ago when they looked at it, but, you know, NASA's got to do their own thing, I guess. And as this satellite circles, because what it's about done with it, what it's doing, it's going to also, I think, not tonight, the big 2-ton mama's going crashing tonight, but the satellite's also going to, they hope, crash in the same spot. It's not going to make as big of a plume, but so they can do more studies. So that's what they're up to. Everybody's going to have their telescopes on the moon looking for this thing. And I guess if you have a big enough telescope, 10 to 15 inch telescope, I don't know what that means, you telescope people might, is what I hear. If you have a big enough telescope, you're going to be able to see it. And they will have the Hubble aimed on this thing too. So Mr. Coors Beer Man suspects that ET is going to be pissed. And I guess if there are extraterrestrials living on the moon, they probably will be fairly upset. And hopefully they won't drop some kind of giant satellite on our heads. If you do, know that Open Minds is your friend. Don't drop it anywhere near the Tempe, Arizona area, please. I've been talking about Denver a lot because there's a lot going on there. And as you know, a few months ago I lived there and I missed it a lot. But I got to say, the weather out here is phenomenal. I get to wake up to sunshine and warmth every day. It's very reliable, the weather, and I am loving it out here. Let's get into some UFO news. Some interesting news going on. One of these that I want to bring up is Chile. Let me go over to the Ustream. I got to do multiple things here, but I'm doing some quality check to make sure my video guide rings up the Chili flag if he hasn't yet. But Chili, they released some video. The military released some UFO video, which is really interesting. And actually, this isn't a new release. This was released a couple years ago. I've talked about him before. He's out in his desk. Hopefully, he's listening. But our reporter, Antonio Junez, is from Chile. And he even let us know, this is not new. This is 2 years ago. Actually, that Maurizio, our Italian guy, sounds more like that. But, you know, it's actually old news. And, in fact, in the link that I put out here, you can see in the story that it is a couple years old. But it really is video that was released by the Chilean military. And you can see them videotaping a light over some battleships. So very interesting, some other interesting video that they had there. Also, the new documentary done by James Fox called I Know What I Saw aired the other day. And it's going to air again, from what I hear, Monday. And hopefully it will air again multiple times in the future. But you may have seen, this is a gentleman who made a documentary called Out of the Blue, which was one of the best, taking the subject seriously. It was shown on, I don't remember which channel. Now it's being shown on History Channel. But this was a few years ago. Now he's made another one. This one focuses largely on this press conference that Leslie Keen had, and she runs group of, you know, freedom of information type of group. And they took a lot of people to the Washington Press Club and did a press conference, and it was really cool. They had a lot of officials from around the world. So they had, I know, a general from Belgium and a lot of other people who worked with the military or were in these governments, talking about their sightings and things that their governments were involved in. And so it was a good show. I mean, a lot of people already know. In fact, a lot of those people at that press conference we had at the MUFON Symposium a couple years ago. So some of us that have been in the field know about this stuff already. But for the general public, I hope they were really blown away by the show, because a lot of credible people talking about UFOs and their governments being involved with the research into UFOs. So that's going to be on again. Take a look at the History Channel near you. I Know What I Saw is the name of the documentary, so keep an eye out for that one. I like these ones, some UK stories. UK, you know, you people out there are doing a good job. My buddy said I'm just butt-kissing the UK people because they have me on Glastonbury Radio. And sure, you know what, I'm not afraid to admit that. But I UK people are really cool. And they have a lot of stories going on in the UK, and some of them, I like this one, Mum Sees UFO, because they, instead of mom, they say, Mum, hello, Mum, can you make some pie? So a lady who saw a UFO, story on that. Also, the UK's spookiest place. They talk about this place in the UK, Gorleston, I believe, and that it's really freaky, and there are lots of werewolf and Bigfoot and phantom panthers and UFOs out there. Also, they released The Sun, which is a big paper out there in the UK, had on their front page a UFO story about a Iranian missile that was launched and a UFO tracking it. And it's a really weird video, and you see what seems to be something streaking through this cloud, or at least the cloud being affected next to the rocket. Some people had looked at that, and I think John Schuessler, one of the MUFON board members, hit it right on the head when he said it looks like it was a shadow from the rocket. And I think it was. The angles were just right where the shadow from the rocket hit that cloud. I think he's right there. So you can take a look at that. You know, I keep promising we're going to have our website up, and this time, well, hopefully, we're going to have that up very, very soon in the next couple of days, where you'll be able to look at it at openminds.com, or .tv, I'm sorry, openminds.tv. people. But for now, you can look at UFOthinkTank.com, and you'll be able to see these news stories I post. Or if you go to the Yahoo groups, you'll be able to search for UFO Think Tank and find these stories. So let's see, a lot more stories going on. What are some big ones to cover? Strange anomalies on the moon. You know, some of you might be familiar with Filer's Files, and this is created by George Filer, who's MUFON Eastern Regional Director. But he had an incredible sighting. He's on the Disclosure Project talking about this, and he sends out weekly files of UFO reports from MUFON and from other places and some other stuff that he's been able to gather. And he always sends out pictures from the moon, and he has some real interesting ones up right now. He puts up pictures of the moon and Mars and possible structures up there. I know I have difficulty with that. I have a hard time picking out structures in some of these pictures. I think maybe there's some matrixing going on here and there. Matrixing is an important term for the UFO investigator. That means when you like look at a picture that's kind of random and make something out of it when there's nothing really there. That's called matrixing. And but I don't know. Take a look at these pictures and see what you think. Finally, Spain UFO video is part of a TV show. Essentially, there was a video out there. Many of you might have seen it on YouTube, where these guys are freaking out on this boat, and these jets fly by, and there's a UFO there that splashes into the water, and the jets fly by again, and the helicopter comes like it's attacking them, and they're freaking out. Well, it was finally confirmed. I can't remember, Papon or something like that is the name of one of the researchers. I got this link from Paula Harris, and she sent me a link to the Spanish television show, which is creating some television show in memory of Orson Welles, E.T. creatures, and it shows the making of this program and the making of that video. So that video is definitely not real, and in fact, you know, our guys here who do our special effects and everything spotted that right off the bat. They were like, hey man, that is fake, and I trusted them, and I'm glad I did, because they turned out to be correct. We just have some incredibly top-notch dudes working at Open Minds, man. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our guest, Ron Regeer. I'm real excited. Okay, let me see if I can... Oh, sorry, Jason, the guy helping me out is going to get mad at me because he showed me how to do this and I messed it up. No call log. All right, well, I have to do it. The old-fashioned way. Little dialing music for you. Little dialing music for you. Little dialing music.
Back to the campground. How may I help you?
Yes, may I please speak to Ron?
Speaking.
Speaking. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Oh, fine, Alejandro. Okay, we're here.
We are here, and we are on the air, and thank you for joining us at Open Mind Radio. I'm real excited to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and I think I had mentioned, you know, we have that photo you had sent me, someone made it, and that on our video, because we're live video streaming this, so it's kind of very exciting. And people are commenting that they love the hat.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I've got a new hat since then. That's my old hat, if I remember it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a new hat, but
Yeah.
Thank you. It's one of the things I couldn't do comfortably in Southern California is wear a hat. Out here, everybody wears hats.
And you're in Utah now.
Yes, Moab, Utah. One of the, I think the Chamber of Commerce calls it the adventure capital of the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? And why is that?
Well, we have over 1,000 miles of off-road trails for people who are on either single track,
mm-hmm,
or Jeep or four-wheel drive, this was because of the uranium mining during the 1950s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the Colorado River, and we have river rafting, everything from mild to wild. So if somebody wants to go river rafting and just drift down and float and see beautiful scenery, they can do that. Or if they want to grab on and get water in their face and go on a J-boat like you've seen in the adventures, we've got that. So
cool. And they have
wonderful
RV parks.
They do. I own one.
Right.
Then we have two national parks, Arches and Canyonlands National Parks.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to visit those. I've visited the Salt Lake area, which is really nice. It's interesting how it's circled by mountains, which confused the heck out of me because, you know, in Denver we have them to the west, and now I'm confused out here because we kind of have them to the north and south, but I'm getting used to it. But beautiful area.
Yeah, it's I really enjoy it. I go out every chance I get and recreate.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wonderful, wonderful place to be and raise kids.
Yeah.
As I went to Denver for a symposium, the Galactic Gathering.
Right.
And I didn't even have to lock my house.
Oh, really?
Of course, I was gone for only 3 to 4 days, 5 days.
Wow, nice. Like you don't even have to lock your house.
No, in the summertime, I go on grocery shopping. I leave the car running in the parking lot with the air conditioning on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to worry about locking it. So it's a different kind of life.
Yeah, nice, nice. I would lock. Yeah, in Tempe, you have to lock your house. I've learned that.
Yeah.
That's one thing you definitely. So you are, let me go over a couple of your titles real quick here. You've been researching for decades. You are a retired aerospace engineer. You're the associate director of research for MUFON, and you head up their abduction team, and you are also the co-state director for MUFON out in Utah.
I resigned that because when I took over the research directorship, I thought associate directorship, I thought it might be, I didn't want to interfere with anyone taking time away from the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be more appropriate to just wear one hat in that arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a nice hat you're wearing, so one's all you need.
I'm also a research specialist on satellite technology for MUFON, and it's not something I wanted to stretch myself too thin.
Right, right. So let's go from the beginning and how you got involved with all of this.
Oh, back in the early 50s,
mm-hmm.
they had a program with Civil Air Control and Civil Defense where people would scan the eyes for Soviet airplanes, and I was definitely interested in airplanes. And so my mom got me signed up for it, and I would keep the log and never saw anything untoward, but I have had a lifelong interest in aviation, and became an aeronautical engineer, always with this, how do they being our visitors from other planets, get from here to there, and why do they go so dang fast, and I'd like to learn how they did it. So that prompted me to become an astronautical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So it was the whole UFO thing that got you to become an engineer?
Yes.
Oh, neat.
Yes, of course.
And how did you get interested in that whole arena at first, really?
Things that fly. For some reason, maybe it was a past life or something. I've been intrigued by things that fly.
Mm-hmm.
Leonardo da Vinci's designs, anything that flies, I've been interested in.
Mm-hmm. And what made you believe that these UFOs, these things were real, flying around?
Just an overwhelming preponderance of little things. It's sort of like after several years, there was just too much. But people generally tell the truth. people generally are good people. They don't lie. They don't make things up. They just found that to get through life, they've got to tell the truth. And so I couldn't believe that literally hundreds, if not thousands of people would be making up stories, all telling essentially the same thing. They saw this ship thing flying through the sky at incredible speeds and doing incredulous maneuvers, for example. And if they're telling the truth, then there must be something there, either that or I should study psychiatry and find out what kind of mass delusion was leading all these people to suffer the same hallucination. So it's either a mass hallucination that's something that psychiatry should look into, or it's something real that physics and an aeronautical engineer should look into. That was the only conclusion I could come to.
And it's funny you bring that up, this mass hallucination thing, which at least back in days past used to be brought up all the time. And it's not a proven thing. In fact, that would be extraordinary. That would be some sort of psychic thing if a bunch of people were able to have the same hallucination.
Yeah. For example, maybe as many as 500,000 people in Tehran in 1976 when the Iranian Air Force launched F-4 Phantoms against the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
500,000 people on their rooftops were running to look at it. Hundreds of windows got broken because the interceptors were flying supersonic at low altitudes above the city.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hard to believe that many people would have a mass hallucination. And
yeah.
Then the witnesses themselves, it turns out that in spite of nighttime comics and spoofing media and thankless, witless debunkers, most of the credible sightings, the more credible the sighting, probably the Air Force study of Project Blue Book, the more credible the witness, the more credible the sighting. And the more credible sightings were from the more credible witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the popular press and the debunkers would have us believe that it's Toothless Bubba and his buddy after they've had drinks all day on a hunting trip that get picked up by little green men. Well, there's no basis in evidence for that.
Right.
So that's the strength of the witness characters and it is to me compelling as well.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's interesting in the history of this arena is that the media and others were able to successfully, you know, paint this picture that it's the Bubbas, when in reality, this whole thing started by very credible, capable, mostly military witnesses, Air Force witnesses, pilots, and in fact, you know, of course, Foo Fighter type stuff in World War II. Some of these were aces.
Yes, and General Sanford in 1952, during the height of the Korean War, gave the largest press conference since the end of World War II to talk about flying saucers over Washington, D.C., saying, essentially, we don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the debunking didn't come until later, and that was the result of a panel convened by the government because they were concerned, and possibly justifiably so. I cannot say that they weren't, because we were in the middle of the Cold War, and they were concerned that should there be a wave of UFOs come in, or even if there wasn't, the people would confuse them, and possibly we could trigger a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. And the Soviets were also concerned. In my book, I mentioned how I include the Soviet Military Review article, where they point out the Soviet Union was concerned that UFOs could be mistaken for missiles coming in and they could trigger a first strike. So the Soviet Union was equally concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So both sides were worried about triggering what could have been a world-ending conflagration because of UFO reports.
Mm-hmm.
So their operative panel essentially said, we'll just make this all a subject of ridicule so people won't report them. It doesn't solve the problem, of course, but at least it gives the government a little bit better handle on countering it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's plug your book for a sec, too. What is the name of your book?
It's How to Build a $125 Million UFO Detector. It's essentially at the cost of the time I wrote it of the in 1998 of the Defense Support Program spy satellite that I worked on that detected UFOs.
And, oh, was it meant
that's,
to?
That's the one thing that Phil Klass, by the way, if I can continue for a moment.
Okay.
I sold a copy to Phil Klass. I never gave anything to Phil Klass. And Phil Klass was poo-pooing it until I gave him the mathematical proof chapter. And he read that, and he never once again made any public comments about spy satellites and UFOs.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah, Phil Klass, shoot. He was, for people who don't know, one of the number one debunkers for the longest time. Your book about this satellite, I mean, you worked on this satellite, and was it built for that purpose?
Some of us thought so, but its primary mission, as stated, was to detect the launch of Soviet ICBMs.
Okay.
And that it did quite well. And so we built, I think it was 23 of them over a period of about 20 years. I'm not sure the exact number. And they're still up there watching 24/7 the entire Earth disk all the time.
Hmm. Very interesting. So you got involved with MUFON back in Southern California, is that correct?
Yes. I was part of the... I don't know if I was a founding member, but we were really struggling in Orange County chapter, which is now one of the more, I guess, one of the larger
mm-hmm.
chapters. I remember we'd have our monthly meetings, we'd pass the hat to collect money to pay the telephone bill so we could have a hot tip line for the
mm-hmm.
phones.
Yep.
That was, and so, and it's reached a point now where every month, the Orange County chapter has a prestigious speaker come in and address the assembly. So they've come a long way. They pay all the expenses of the speakers.
Yeah, I get their emails, and they have some great speakers out there.
And then they've also awarded grants to UFO researchers.
Wow.
And, so we've gone from passing the hat to
mm-hmm.
Handing out money to worthy causes and having great speakers. So
yeah, we were still passing successful. The hat in Denver about 7 years ago for the hotline before MUFON came up with 1-800 number for everybody, which is great.
Yeah, and they made great strides at MUFON. I was
mm-hmm.
Walt did a splendid job of keeping the doors open for many years and passing the gavel over to Mr. Schuster was, I think, a wonderful step, and that got us moved into the 20th century. And then within the last couple of years, Mr. Carrion has moved us right into the 21st century. And we've gone from being an organization that was famous for having the black vault from which no UFO reports ever came to being the place that has reports worldwide almost instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So now it was
so it, that's one thing that definitely very transparent. You can go look at all those reports. We had Mark Easter on and we talked about that, but I wanted to ask you now, because another thing MUFON gets criticized for is not being concerned about the occupants of the craft, only the craft, but you've put together an abduction research team.
Yes, and we've got several internationally famous people who are conducting studies and doing some great work. We're developing protocols right now, and we'll soon have in place a full set of protocols present before the board, where we expect to really get to the bottom of what's going on with both the abductees and the experiencers. And it seems there's we can make two broad categories of people who are encountering our people from outer space, or whatever you want to call them, aliens. And that seems to be the people who are willingly meeting with them, and those who are less willing to meet with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're working with both groups, trying to reach a consensus of what's going on. And it started out because, well, if you want to find out, you ask the people who are there. Who are the people who meet them? Who are the people who encounter them?
Mm-hmm.
We don't learn about airlines and how they operate by looking at airplanes flying through the sky. We go buy stock in the company, so to speak, or talk to pilots, or talk to people who have flown. They can tell us how the airplanes work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the abduction research team is about.
Now, you're going to start to take those reports where people are talking about willingly or unwillingly having relations,
yes.
I guess, with the extraterrestrials, and then you're going to take those and go from there.
Yes, we're first of all developing a set of protocols. What do we talk about? What do we ask them?
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to know? How do we want to know? So a whole list of essentially questions there, and there's always the need to differentiate between those who are, let's just say, more vivid in their imaginations and those who are actually encountering something. So
yeah.
That's one of our concerns, is separating the stories as best we can, and that's why we have some really skilled therapists on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a slow process. It's a process. It's not something that's as cut and dry as here's a photograph, take it apart and evaluate it. Like we have Jeff Sanyo and Bruce McAfee that do so well. This is a more learned study, I guess you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have those who are trained and skilled in that arena to work on that.
Yeah. And at what point then, in assuming that this happened in your career and your research, did you begin to believe that people were interfacing with extraterrestrials?
Some time ago. I met George Adamski back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it would be in the 1960s.
Okay.
But I think the question is more of when did, if I can maybe interject a personal thought in there.
Go for it.
When did I start believing that there was something more than the occasional joyride going on? And that was about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because several different polls I read, and I think the Roper poll was one of the ones in the 90s, where if we believe the pollsters, and I have no reason not to, it turns out that the equivalent of the population of the state of Iowa is abducted every year in the United States. Now, if the Swiss were to come in and take that many people hostage, I think the government would sit up and listen. But the fact that there's such a giggle factor associated with almost anything alien, it doesn't even hardly get a nod on the news.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the concerns I had.
Yeah. the latest news piece that I can think of was that ABC piece. Did you see that where they kind of covered abductions?
Yeah, I was disappointed. Mainly because on other news pieces, they never, ever come in and try to debunk. I think most good UFO researchers, I'll count myself in that, are true skeptics. Show me, prove
right.
it to me. Whereas most of the people who call themselves skeptics in the public arena are debunkers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want evidence. They don't want proof. They want to prove everything is in agreement with their preconceived ideas, and evidence be damned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's chilling, and it's really sad that because I think some of them have pretty good minds if they weren't closed, and it's disappointing.
Yeah, I always think, you know, I don't understand why someone would call themselves like a skeptic, a professional skeptic. We're all skeptical as researchers, and as scientists, you know, you have to be skeptical. It's part of science. So it's an aspect of how you go about things, but to call yourself a skeptic, you know, in history, the skeptics and debunkers turn out to be the fools, because they're the ones who say we couldn't fly, the Earth is flat, all of these ridiculous things that turn out to be wrong.
Yeah, rocks cannot stay up in the sky and fall down. Therefore, there's no such things as meteors.
Right.
The Earth is flat. We know that.
Yeah.
And the history is replete with people who set their hat a certain way, and later on somebody came and knocked it off. I think it's much healthier to maintain an open attitude of, I don't know for sure, let's find out. The main reason is I know what I know. I don't know what you know, and I don't know what anybody else knows. So I want to learn. I want to find out. I want to know what's going on. And the only way I can do that is to ask questions and remain open to new ideas and new thoughts.
I've got right here a little model. I wanted to ask you about Adamski. I've got here a little model of the craft that Adamski's done, you know, how it moves kind of weird and stuff. And what I think is interesting about Adamski is that he wasn't the only one who had taken photos, or he had actual videos of these craft. They were taken all over the world of this, the same shape, and you can go look him up, and, you know, I'm playing with a little model of one now. He, if you do the research, I know his pictures, his videos, it might be hard to believe because it's so weird, but he had a lot of evidence and some scientists to back up that he was probably legitimate.
Yeah, it was an amazing bunch of stuff. And he was getting ready to leave on a trip, so I was able to only spend about 10 minutes with him. And that was while he's hurriedly running from the house up near what's on Mount Palomar, but not all the way up to the observatory, to his car. So it's almost lying to say I met him, but I didn't sit down to have a nice long interview and discussion and see everything. But he showed me a couple of photos. He had a lot of people who were convinced that he's seeing something real. He's photographing real things. Who came up and he was sort of the Billy Meyer of his time. And it's sad that he's gotten a bad press after so long. I found it intriguing that if we take the Adamski UFO, the classic dome-shaped UFO with the three nodes underneath, and look at that inside view, it's almost identical to one of the petroglyphs of the Hopi Patuvota, or flying shield. And maybe they were 5,000 years ahead of their time, or maybe they were seeing something then, because their legends also talk of people dressed in ice with mica faces that came out of the heavens with a great roar and carried people around. And during their third world destroyed cities with their flying powder votas, their flying shields, and they came from Atlanta. So I mean, it's just the more we get into this stuff, the more it's there's synchronicity and bizarre happenings that are universal and worldwide.
Well, and let's get into some of that research. I know the Galactic Gathering that you went to recently, you talked about Hopi and Anasazi legends or actually interactions with ETs?
Well, I think there were actual interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is there's too many pieces of the puzzle that fall in line. I think most people who study the ancient Americans know of Chaco Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize that there were other structures there and that these structures were aligned with a greater degree of precision than are the pyramids of Giza. That they were observatories. Chaco Canyon, the big structure of Pueblo Bonito, was the largest building in the Americas until the 1890. Five stories tall, 800 rooms. However, most people also don't know that only 8 to 10 of those rooms were ever occupied.
Wow.
It was a big false front. They built this immense observatory that perfectly aligned for the solstice and the equinox. And yet, when it came, they were there for less than 270 years. Some of the beams in the buildings, of which there are 50,000 beams hauled from over 75 miles away, were squared off as if they were sawed. But there's no evidence whatsoever of these ancient peoples possessing saws to saw through timbers in a square cut. And there's mysteries. How did they do this?
Mm-hmm.
In their legends, they talk about how they were to migrate following a star, and everywhere the star stopped, they were to build a village. And when we look at these villages, we find out that they're a direct high correlation of reverse image of the solar of the night sky.
Hmm.
The three mesas of the Hopi are almost identically positioned with far greater accuracy than the much touted pyramids of Giza being the three stars in Orion's belt. The three mesas villages line up even more precisely.
Hmm.
And this doesn't stop there. It goes all the way from Chaco being this dog star, Sirius, all the way into California. And these villages aren't where one might expect. Some of them are 2 miles from a water supply. But their god told them to stop here, build a village here, whereas the water was in the fields for their crops were far away. So it's just the legends, and then we look at the petroglyphs, and I'm learning to read those. And we see in the petroglyphs the legends repeated in stone
mm-hmm.
of the flying shields. I've got photographs of one series. I call it take and release rock. One boulder that on one panel it talks about, and it describes a small group fleeing from a flying shield, seeking safety behind either in this jumble of rocks. The next panel shows he's still fleeing, but he's captured by a flying reptile. And he's a member of the mountain lion clan. And the next panel shows him attempting to return, and he's stopped by a serpent. But then with the aid of the star people, he comes down. And that's all right there, chipped in stone.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can see it. So, that's sort of a dramatic abduction and return 5,000 years ago.
Yeah. What about their legends?
Well, the legends tell of their migrations, and we're in the fourth world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this world will end when the Blue Star Casino dances in the plaza, and there's omens that tell of the coming of the Blue Star Casino, and they talk about the white man coming from across the sea and conquering the people with fire sticks, which is probably the conquistadores, or could be, of strange beasts with horns like the buffalo, but much bigger. Could be very well the cattle. Seas turning black and killing animals, such as the Xenvavies. Nine of them in all. Those have all been fulfilled, except the very last one, which is maybe fulfilled, and that was, we'll be traveling in space, and the house in the sky will fall to the earth. And maybe that was Challenger, maybe it's the Skylab, and maybe it's the International Space Station decaying in orbit or being struck by something. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the final sign before the Blue Star Casino dances in the Pueblo. And then the day of purification, when that comes, that's then the Hopi will, who have been, and those who have been kept true to the faith, who have not forgotten, will be picked up and returned to their home planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the Hopi legends. That's a very brief thumbnail sketch of them.
Yeah. Where do you think your home planet is?
That's in my new book that I'm finishing up, 2012, The Star People Return.
Mm. And do those legends correlate with 2012?
Yes. Well, the thing of it is, the Hopi are keepers of the earth. Black people were put by God in charge of water. The yellow people were put in charge of the wind. And the white people, interesting enough, were put in charge of fire. Look what we've done with fire. Internal combustion engines, jets, weapons, all are based on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the Hopi legends, they take care of the earth. And they say, well, our cousins, the Maya, they're the ones in charge of time. Do you want to know what is going to happen? You talk to them. Our job is to keep the earth in balance. And so, there's a division of responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that before. And I know one of the speakers, did you get to see Rainbow Eagle?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I saw him at the conference. We shared back-to-back tables, so we were back-to-back and chatting quite a bit.
Cool.
And then Sunday evening, we went to hear his talk at the Denver Paranormal Center, I think is what it's called.
Paranormal Research Center Forum.
Studies, I think is what it is. Anyway, we had listened to the talk up there that he gave.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he's great. I was real excited that he was coming out, and too bad I moved before the conference happened, but he's a Choctaw teacher, and he talks about very similar things that you were just talking about.
Yes, and we dovetailed quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great conference, well-organized, well-put-together, great speakers, and I believe they'll have one last year, should we exist on this plane for that long.
You think we will?
I think so. I don't see 2012 as being as we would, if it happens, I think that it'll happen in 2012, but I don't think it's the end of the world. I think it's the beginning of a new phase of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's up to us to determine where we want to be and how we want to grow and what path we want to take.
Mm-hmm.
And as we do that, and more people gather together, I think that we tend to make the world a better place.
So,
go ahead.
So you've been involved, you know, for decades researching this stuff, and it sounds like, which is great, that you have researched a wide variety of different areas in this field. So what are the trends and the changes that you've seen in the past, and you know, where do you see this research today, and how is it different than it used to be?
Well, I think it's almost humorous that I remember when we used to say, golly, if we had just one good photo, that'll convince everybody. Well, we've had thousands of good photos. And then it was, if we had one good photo and two independent corroborating witnesses, well, we've had that. And then it was, if we had one good photo, two independent corroborating witnesses, and a radar return, well, we've had that. And every time we raised the bar, and every time we met that expectation, we've still got a group of people who say, well, that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good enough. So I find that humorous. And then I find also that we've gone from hardware to, you know, where, golly, what makes it fly? Which is, you know, that's a nice thing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
To who's inside of them. And I think the next big step will be, there's going to be some people wondering what makes them fly, and some people, you know, worrying about how does the engine work, and some people saying, well, let's talk to these people who have talked to them, while other people are flying to other galaxies, distant stars, interfacing with them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the next step, is a realization that we're not only not alone, that there's a large contingent of people out there in space who really do want us to quit bickering and to join them in this great adventure of life that seems to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the place where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought was great about the premise of the Galactic Gathering, which was going to that step, okay, you know, they're piloted. Who are these guys? What are their cultures like? You know, just who are the guys flying these things around and visiting us? And it's hard to get to answers there because it's hard to know often who is really interfaced with them and who hasn't. But it seems to be a step in that direction.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one we should all look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're awfully hard on ourselves. I hear a lot of people, nobody to follow Stephen, saying, well, we're a primitive society, and why would they want us to be in their neighborhood, and things like that. And I think, there's some primitiveness, but there's also a high degree of spirituality with a lot of earthbound people. We in the Western world have a way of imposing a lot of guilt on everybody.
Yeah.
Failing to remember that our Judeo-Christian heritage, sin, the word sin, meant to fall short. It's an archery term. If you didn't draw your bow back far enough, you didn't aim high enough, your arrow fell short. That's sin. Hopi. There's no word for sin. You forgot. People forget. And so the good people, their job is to remind them, to help them remember, not to punish. And so I think if that's the true spirituality that we're all striving for, then maybe we should remember that and quit beating ourselves and think about how we can help one another, how we can reach out to our brothers and sisters and in a spirit of love and move on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where we all have to go.
Yeah, you know, one thing I think is interesting is that the media, the news, is so negative. It's all the bad stuff and all the bad people. I thought this was really funny. And there was an article.
Fear sales.
Yeah, right. Fear sales. And it was funny. I saw this article today going to a California site, and it said three people in Oxnard die from separate incidents.
Yeah.
You know, scaring people. Three people died in the city, you know, making it sound like, oh, my gosh, all these people dying in Oxnard. But one thing I've noticed, you know, I was a journalist major and gone to a lot of conferences and stuff like that. And in almost all the conferences where you have a major media person or a producer or something like that, someone from the public will say, why is the news so negative and how do you get away from that? And
mm-hmm.
I think it indicates people aren't like what we're portrayed to be like in the news. Not everybody's out to kill you or to get you. And you can prove that by everyday life. You know, people are pretty much, hopefully you don't live in that bad of an area, but people are pretty much nice, and, you know, people aren't coming and trying to attack you and get you all the time.
Yeah, it's like Rainbow Eagle was saying, you learn respect when you walk in the woods, and his book is The Walk in the Woods. It's a great book. And he says, you see the black and white kitty cat? You respect him, and you don't walk into his space because you find out that there are consequences to that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you encounter the bear, you don't challenge the bear, you respect the bear, and your walk in the woods is a pleasant one.
Right.
So what we want to do is to walk in the woods, wherever our woods are, with respect.
Mm-hmm.
Respect for one another and respect for the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing to fear if you walk with respect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's still bad people out there. That's true.
Yeah.
And you can't get around that, but I think a lot of what we do is we project an aura of fear, an aura of anger, an aura of danger. And I think that becomes what we attract. And I think that, sure, good things, bad things still happen to good people, but I really believe that it's up to each of us to walk in the woods in a respectful manner.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up Rainbow Eagle and his lessons, and you know what I really love, too? He talks about his peace shield. And one of them, you were talking about respect. And he talks about how, you know, the peace shield is a circle with a dot in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And everything's in this circle, and everything is you. And everyone is in that circle as well. And just as
everyone is welcome in that circle.
Right. And this concept of, you know, how we have a responsibility to each other. So when you're talking about, that person is evil, as if it's a total third party and you have nothing to do with that. But that we do have something to do with even others and how they act. You know, he talks about everybody being brothers and sisters and how we, you know, need to be conscious of how everybody feels and why they do what they do, and just a simple level of respect there. And I love that idea of, you know, put some thought. Why is that person bad? He talks about your boss as being a jerk, you know, bring him a cake or something, not, you know, as opposed to just fighting, you know, fire with fire.
Yeah, it's sad. I think a lot of it is the way we've been raised, and I look forward to meeting people and joining them in a feeling and nature and nurturing arena where we can really take care of one another. And that's
mm-hmm.
one of the nice things about some of these symposia that we can learn and then take that back and apply these lessons to our lives as we live them. I think that's critically important.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons why, you know, we've gotten into this philosophical area and everything, in this UFO research in the Galactic Gathering. One reason I thought it'd be neat to put those people together when I was helping actually originate that group was that the messages that people have that say they've spoken with extraterrestrials are very similar to those philosophies that Native Americans share, or even like the base philosophies a lot of religions share. And I thought that similarity would be important.
And it is. And it's a universal one. It turns out that I think if you look at the core of the religions of the world, not the way they're applied by people, but the original teachings, if you will, that we find out that it's almost like they're all reading from the same book. Turning one another's page, if you will, and the Hopi and the Dalai Lama, great buddies. I think Buddha would get along great with the group of people. It's just amazing the way that these all seem to dovetail and interrelate.
Mm-hmm. You know, getting into that, you know, we went and watched this local movie last night, and we're actually going to have the director on next week. It's called Appearance of a Man, and he gets into these philosophical areas and all of this and spirituality and kind of related to the Phoenix Lights incident and kind of his story and how it affected people and his idea of UFOs and all this. What do you feel is a connection between spirituality and UFOs?
That's a tough one. I'm outside because my parrot's bedtime is right now, so
oh.
My truck. I think there's a strong, strong correlation between the two. The more I see and the more I study, it seems that these may even be spiritual craft as opposed to hammered out in the factory and riveted together and bolted into being. I think that there's more and more evidence that they're living organisms. And it's kind of frightening from the standpoint of, are we ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to go? I think most people are, if they relieve themselves of their fears and prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping they'll do that. And I think that it's our job to teach them to do that, to help them. Give them a hand up and help them on that path. But I still think that there's a lot of room for growth and awareness,
mm-hmm.
and especially spiritual growth. And I think that if we allow ourselves to become aware, I think too many of us try to shut that part down. I know for years I did. Didn't want to believe in anything, dreams, anything spiritual. Well, I get all my spirituality going to church and repeating the same things that people have repeated for years. But that works in some limited way, but it's not really opening up my spiritual growth. And there's a place together. It's sort of like our spiritual journey is almost like running an automobile race, Daytona, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody is out there wants to hurt us, but if they mess up, we might get hurt. And church is sort of like the pit stop that we make, where we go in and get hopefully some nurturing and a chance to NASCAR officials that sort of set the rules but let us run our own race.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to another question, you know, that some of us debated about last week, and the kind of fundamental question that kind of gets batted around a lot in this field, and the good alien versus the bad alien. Are they all good? Are they all bad? Or is it something in between? What are your thoughts that way?
Yes.
My favorite answer.
No, I think there's probably some those that maybe don't have our best interests at heart to call them bad. Maybe it's more like we should adopt the Hopi attitude. Maybe they've forgotten. I don't believe that everybody in the world, everybody in Moab, everybody in Utah, everybody in the United States has my best interests at heart. I don't see any reason to believe everybody in the galaxy has my best interests at heart. Or certainly everybody in the universe. But that doesn't mean they're bad or evil. They're on their path. We're on our path. I'm on my path. And I'm sure there are people that have looked at me and think I'm bad or evil. And it's my job to not project bad or evil. It's my job to go down my path being the best person I can. And so I believe that if we continue to project that and fail to judge others, to just say, well, you know, they aren't remembering the same things I was taught to remember. That allows us to look at them in a different light, and that allows us to go on in a different way. And so,
yeah. I know what you're saying, and it's kind of funny, you know. I think, you know, I like that some people, I think John Mack even would put it that, you know, good and bad, you know, what we have to label them either way, or I know, you know, I think of Rainbow Eagle. I love his philosophy that he shares, but the idea of, you know, you need to worry about your circle, kind of like what you're talking about, worry about your path and what you're responsible for, and your energies that you put out and that you surround yourself are your responsibility. They're something you have control over, and you need to focus on that, and kind of having faith in yourself then, having faith that, you know, it's the whole it's a good day to die concept, that if every day you're walking your path and doing your best and you don't have guilt, then...
Hello?
Yeah, still here.
Mind interruption. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So being the state director in Utah, and I know you were a co-state director, I think, in California as well, what are some of the most interesting cases you've come across?
Okay, I have not been active in Utah ufology for a little over 3 years.
Wow.
And I think the most interesting cases that I've come across are the early cases in the 60s that were conducted, investigations were conducted by Junior Hicks. And I don't know if those have even made CMS yet. But they were of the bizarre... make a good TV series, but nobody would believe it type. aliens that looked like tumbleweeds that talked.
Really?
Aliens that had looked like telephone poles. The guy was thought he was in a telephone pole jungle, and it turned out to be the long telephone pole-like legs of a group of aliens. A group, two children, 11 and 12, two brothers that were watching TV, and there was a UFO up camera was pointed, the TV camera was pointed at the crew of the alien craft, strange beings in there, and took over their TV set. And now, the irony of this is that these sightings all occurred within about 20 miles of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, wow.
Yet this was 30 years before anybody had ever thought about the Skinwalker Ranch. So it's just another one of these strange coincidences. I don't think so, because I don't believe in coincidences. I think everything happens for a reason.
Maybe you could share with the audience, people who don't know what the Skinwalker Ranch is.
Okay. It's an area up near the Ute Indian Reservation in northeastern Utah, near the town of Roosevelt, Fort Duchesne, in that area. And what happened there is it's been a series of bizarre incidents, as we found out from these reports from Junior Hicks, to go back 40, 50, 60, 100, 200, 500 years. According to the Ute Indian tribe, they helped Kit Carson in his conquering of the Indians some time ago, the Navajo, and as a result of that, the Navajo put a curse on them. The curse was the Skinwalker would haunt them. The problem is the Skinwalker legend up there precedes that incident. So anyway, that's just a minor history thing. We go back to the modern times, and it turns out that about 10 or 15 years ago, a family moved into this ranch, and they raised very, very prized cattle. I forget the breed. It's a breed I had not heard of before nor since. And they came in, grandpa, mom, dad, and a 16-year-old son, all driving trucks that brought all their household and ranch goods up to this, their dream ranch. And they've been there a short time. They put some calves in some pipe stalls, and as they're sitting there wondering what to unload next, they see this wolf dog-like creature sauntering across the field towards them. And first thing, it's a wild wolf, and then they see, oh, it's friendly. It doesn't seem to mind humans, and wolves are a little leery, usually, and wary. But as it got closer, it's big. And it's immense. And didn't even pay any attention to it. It just sauntered right up between them and walked right up. And didn't pay any attention whatsoever to them. And went up and bit one of their cows on the nose and tried to drag it through the pipe stall. So the rancher was kind of upset about that. So he grabbed something and struck the wolf across the back. The wolf not only didn't yelp, it didn't even act as if it had been hit. No response whatsoever. Continued growling, pulling at this poor calf. So he reached the glove box of his truck and grabbed his .357 Magnum and shot 5 rounds into it. Again, the wolf did not react. I mean, .357 Magnum, close range, powerful impact. In the meantime, his son went in the house and grabbed the 30-06 deer rifle and fired 3 rounds into it, knocked off a chunk of flesh. Actually, physically, a chunk of it fell to the ground. The animal then let go of the nose of the calf. Didn't run, just sort of sauntered up across the field from whence it had come. And the rancher told his son to go back in and get some more ammo. We're going to go kill this thing. Still not quite believing what it seemed, but 5 shots from a .357 Magnum at close range and 1 or 3 shots from a .30-06 that killed it. So son Ram grabbed the ammo and they could follow the animal across, and then it went across the field, dropped down to a small, dropped down where the stream was. They could see the animal's footprints going across the mud flat, and they go out of ways and just flat disappear. The tracks disappeared. They didn't go in the water. Mm-hmm. The mud, tracks in the mud just disappeared. Well, this struck them as strange. And But they had work to do, so they go back to the ranch and unload the rest of the stuff and continue on. But bizarre things continue to happen to them. The wife would come home from the store, unload the groceries, put them in the cupboard, go back in the other room, and all the groceries would be out of the cupboard. One night, a big RV-type thing was parked out in their field. Big features in it. It went out and disappeared. I mean, just bizarre things happening all the time. Eventually, they caught the attention of a wealthy industrialist named Bob Bigelow, who sent a team of scientists out there. They set up cameras. They set up scientific instruments to measure, to try. And they witnessed all kinds of bizarre things. Some of them even sustained injuries during the night, bloody noses and bruises and from encounters with something. But whatever they are, whatever's going on up there, was able to defeat this top team of PhD scientists sent up there to study it.
Mm-hmm.
They put cameras on three telephone poles, such that cameras were always observing the area 360 degrees and one another, so that nobody could mess with the cameras without the other cameras seeing. Well, one night, one of the cameras went dead. We'll find out too, because we've got the other cameras. Not only did the camera go dead, they went out, the wires gone. Now, the wires were put in, were taped together with duct tape, then fished through a piece of conduit, and then the conduit fastened to the post. So the wires were gone, no sign of duct tape, no sign of anything, and when they checked the tapes of the cameras, all they could see was the light blink out and the wires disappeared. They couldn't see any cause for it. Another night, the physicist was up on the hill with the biologist, and they were there watching through night vision goggles, and this yellow spot appeared. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then finally some black creature called out of this yellow spot, which turned out to look like a yellow opening, but an opening in space, which he couldn't understand. And they'd already packed away their instruments, and they're trying to hurriedly unpack them, and by the time they get them unpacked, it disappeared again. So after several years of this, it wasn't an every night occurrence, but enough to keep them busy. The activity diminished to the point where they determined that possibly what we're doing here is our increased surveillance is causing this thing to go dormant. And so Mr. Bigelow still owns the ranch, still patrolled. There's a security force keeping people out, but there's no more scientific investigation going on.
Yeah, there was a lady just last week who asked me about the ranch and asked me if, you know, if they went on there, would it be trespassing? Her and her friend wanted to go there. I told her, yes, indeed, it would be trespassing. You get in trouble going on the ranch. And then she came back to me and said, well, I talked to my friend about going there, and he said, stay the heck away from there. It's too dangerous anyway. So a lot of weird stuff. For people to see more information on this, there's a book called Skinwalker.
Hunt for the Skinwalker by George Knapp and Colm Kelleher.
Mm-hmm. You can also go to the MUFON site and look up some of the DVDs of some of their past speakers. And George Knapp and Colm had spoken at MUFON about the ranch and some really interesting these stories like you're talking about. Some crazy stuff going on at that ranch. So it's an incredible story, and I've talked to Colm about it, and they essentially said, yeah, we were outsmarted by this phenomena, that we couldn't figure it out. It was always one step ahead. It, you know, right behind their backs, weird stuff would happen. And like you said, they would have cameras on their cameras to tell when they were messed up, and they still weren't able to capture anything. So incredibly strange stuff. So, you know, when you throw in that weird stuff, which was documented by the scientific research happening on the ranch, and you're talking about this other weird stuff happening near the ranch, that kind of puts it in perspective. You know, by itself, it's like, wow, that's some weird stuff. I don't know about that. But when you say it's next to the Skinwalker Ranch, it's like, oh, okay. You know, that makes a lot more sense.
It almost makes it acceptable.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. Then it's like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a strange field, and the more I find out I know, the more I find out I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a great comment there, because even, you know, the director was talking last night, and he was talking about, you know, the people that say they have it all figured out are probably the people that don't have it figured out. And I agree with that. The more you discover, the more questions you have, the more enigmatic things seem to be.
Yep, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you? You said you're writing a book?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And it started out, I thought I could finish up by the July, and then I thought I'll have copies available for the Galactic Gathering in September. Mr. Brown wants me to have copies available for the International UFO Congress in February. As I said, the more I study, the more petroglyphs I take pictures of and see these amazing things, the more I think, wow, here's another chapter I got to read.
Right.
Right. And here's something else that has to go. And I've got 3 pages of bibliography and 3 pages, what I find the term, maybe it's already been used, webliography, different web pages that provide research.
I've never heard that term used, but it's appropriate.
Well, I figure, how do I give credit when I look at somebody's webpage as if I were reading a book? You know, it's they're studied, and I learned something from them, and I can apply it, so I think they should get credit for it. So I just figured I'll make up this word, and everybody will either agree, or they'll think, boy, that guy's off his rocker. Webliography? What the heck is that? So
I like it.
So you heard it here first, maybe.
All right, great. So you'll be at the UFO Congress in February. That's the last week in February. You can Google UFO Congress. I'll be there as well. Everybody should be there, so check that out. Plus, if you're in a cold area like Colorado, you know, you want to get out of there during February anyway,
yeah,
where it's nice and warm.
Minnesota or somewhere.
Yeah, well, Utah
then
probably gets chilly.
The Press Retrieval Conference in November.
Great, I'll be there too.
Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yep, November in Las Vegas. So that'll be a lot of fun, and you can find out more about that at ufoconvention.com.
Yep, very good.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. We are out of time, and it was great talking to you.
Thank you. Is there any way I can get a copy of this? Could you send me a CD of it?
Yeah, I'll send you a link where you can download it.
Okay.
Yeah,
very good.
That works, and if that doesn't, I'll take your CD.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and you were a great host. And,
thank you.
Anytime I can be on and help you spread the word, give me a call.
All right, will do. Watch out for those big Utah werewolves.
There you go. I shall.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay, Alejandro. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. The great Ron Regeer, and you'll see him with his new hat at either of those conferences that he spoke of. So, thank you all for being here. We will have, like I said, his name is Daniel Pace. He directed this movie, Appearance of a Man, and it's kind of loosely, well, the whole story starts with the Phoenix Lights, and there's all kinds of craziness that happens then. And this is cool. He's going to let our listeners watch the movie for free online, but you're not going to get the code or the website till the end of the show, so you're going to have to listen to the entire show. But trust me, you're going to like it because he's really cool. He has a lot of great stuff to say. Really nice guy. He's got sort of an accent. And actually, he's going to be in the studio. So if you're watching on the live view stream, you're going to be able to see him, and we'll have to put our little Iargan buddy. I call him Charlie. I think my buddy calls him Chico-san over here, but you guys have a great week. Talk to you next week, where we'll talk about the movie Appearance of a Man.
Dad.